Hey, everybody. This week on the podcast, my friend and hilarious comedian, Bill Burr. Bill is probably the comedian working today, hands down, brilliant, talking about everything from social issues, political issues, people, why people suck. We get into a whole bunch of stuff. We talk about him growing up in Boston. I'm from Rhode Island. We're fellow New Englanders. We talk about our days doing stand-up together in New York City, why people suck. A whole bunch of stuff. He's also got a great podcast you should check out where he does some hilarious ranting. And we talk about his F is for Family animated show on Netflix. Very, very funny. Really cool conversation with my buddy, Bill Burr. And also, I want to thank everybody for the kind words on social media and through my website about my June 15th appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, where I did stand-up. It was an awesome night. The crowd was killer. Had a great time. So thanks for the kind words. Hey, and please spread the word about the podcast. Send links around. We want to keep building this baby. All right. Enjoy Bill Burr. All right, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We are in Los Angeles at the Comedy Store with my good friend Bill Burr. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man?
We're both New England guys. You're from Canton, Mass. I'm from Providence, Rhode Island. You were just ranting about the 2-point conversion? What's your issue?
Like they, for some reason, all of a sudden, all these fucking, the video game generation just thought the extra point was so fucking boring. And their big solution was, they should have him kick it back at the fucking 30. It's like, dude, that's a field goal. So now you're going to have the option of going for the 2-point conversion. Like, that's somehow going to make the game more exciting.
Right.
The only time a 2-point conversion is exciting is at the end of the game
exactly.
When the other team is down by one. It's going to be just as fucking boring.
Yeah, but
I love the extra point because it was this quirky, stupid fucking part of the game.
Right.
And the announcers were always talking about the fucking touchdown that was just scored. And then, if you actually missed one, it was huge. It was a 2-point conversion. It's like, hey, whatever.
I use the extra point to go get another beer. I'm like, this is like, they're pretty much a fade. It's like they're fade complete. They're gonna hit the what is it?
But
one out of 100 times.
It bothered me.
But the point is, for me, I think the NFL is just trying to squeeze every dollar out of it by making it right. It's all about offense, all about offense, all about offense. So I think that they just come up
it's
with these.
It's all about offense, and now it's all about women because they've reached maximum density on the amount of fucking males that they can attract. So now
don't you think it's also because these guys are punching out women and they're trying to look like they're female friendly? So they
Oh yeah, so they're trying to maintain. But they're also, even before that shit happened, they were still dick out with the pink lady there, and they had the whole fucking month of pink, And I think a couple of nickels trickled down from all those millions of dollars of pink jerseys, and actually somebody with breast cancer maybe gets a fucking glass of lemonade. I don't even know how it fucking works out. But it's such a crock of shit. The whole thing's about, I even think having the female coach. The female coach is the reaction to fucking Ray Rice dragging the woman out of the other. They don't give a fuck about women. They give a fuck about money. They just started paying taxes after 2010. They were considered a fucking charity up until 2010.
Oh, that's right. Well, here's the thing for me. I didn't know until all of this, Brady, Deflategate thing. Goodell makes $44 million last year. And I'm thinking, why do you need the pink month with the check? Just write a check for $2 million. What is he getting paid $44 million for? Where does that money come from?
I don't know. Well, I'm not paying taxes. I have no idea where it comes from. Look, I love NFL football, and I love the league. But, some of the way that they do things when it comes to all of that shit, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but the whole problem with sports in general is, it's like the Wizard of Oz. Don't look behind the curtain, right? It's the least... Like, my kid watches sports all the time. He's into baseball, loves it. It's the least all-American fucking thing in America because it's guys... They're all fucking cheating in one form or another. They're juicing, they're this,
but
that,
how is that not America? How did we get this country?
Yeah, that's
true.
We
came in, we said the people were here were savages, and they weren't. They were just sort of chilling out. living off the land.
I can't watch fucking John Wayne movies because I feel so bad that it's such manipulation, they're killing Indians.
If we all lived the way they did, I don't think that the rivers would be as fucked up. Granted, we probably would have died at 30.
Right, but it would have been better.
Before, yeah, it would have been great.
I actually talk about my act. I'm ready to commit suicide any day now. It's just fucking too hard. It's just too hard getting you through your day. And so I feel like all of these leagues, right? Like, they don't want you to ask the hard question. They don't really want to reveal what goes on behind the scenes, right? I mean, and that's okay.
They don't want that in this business. They don't want it in politics. They don't want it in corporations. You don't want it in your house. You don't want somebody reading your fucking emails. You don't. We're all pieces of shit. So I don't look at the NFL or corporations.
You don't think they're any more Hippocratic than any other part of our
They're no more evil than I am. It's just a collection of me. and then they form like a superhero and become a super me, and it all goes through the fucking roof.
I see that little log line below the NFL. It's Super Bill Burr League, and
that's what it is. I'm shitting on myself, just saying like I can't like ever like full on criticize somebody.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
Without having a little bit of going, dude,
I'm not saying
this is ridiculous. What about what you did last week?
Though? Yeah, but I'm not saying that. But I'm not saying that you and I are saying we're holier than thou. But I think and you and I could disagree about this. But I think sports puts themselves out there. Like corporations don't start their day with a fucking jet flyover and doing the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, really, where did that fucking come from?
Oh yeah, where did that come from?
That I got to stand up, take my fucking hat off, and put my hand when I go to Fenway?
Yeah, like, but they're also not genetically altering the food and forcing other countries to do it and owning seeds. They don't go like Nestle right now is saying they don't believe that water is a human right and they want to privatize water. I can handle a couple of jets.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Nah, I think that those like the fucking guys there, Anthony Monsanto there, whatever his fucking name is.
Yeah.
And you only have to say that so you don't get in fucking trouble. They'll like sue you. It's like that right there is the single biggest act of fucking terrorism. Yeah. We're over there fighting 20 guys in a jungle gym, and you got literally have a group of people poisoning the food supply. Genetically altered. Fucking with the food supply. Fucking with the food supply. But politicians make so little money,
right.
And all you gotta do, that's why I love Donald Trump. Like, I don't wanna elect him, but what he's saying, he goes,
right.
You give a politician money, they'll do anything you want.
Right.
And he was at the Republican.
Yeah, but he's the guy giving him the money, so there's hypocrisy in that.
Exactly. But what I love is he goes, I gave all of these guys money.
Right.
It was like 10 guys on stage,
right.
And one guy goes, you never gave me money. It's like, yeah, not yet. So the thing about it is, like, then this election comes up, okay?
Yeah.
We got the drought. We have all these environmental issues. You have overpopulation. And you have genetically altered fucking food. None of that will come up.
Right.
Because that's all big money in their fucking pockets, so
right.
they get another
And I don't think the populace cares about those issues. You gotta go to their pocketbook and talk about jobs and talk about schools.
They're way smart.
Saying they're not smart, but look, my father put floors in for a living, okay? He was exhausted when he came home. The big issues for him were putting food on the table
and
for his kids.
It's because of the banker cunts and they got everybody running on the fucking wheel. The bottom line is there's nobody in any party, liberal, Republican, Democrat,
right.
Anybody that can fix it. What would you have to fix it? You'd have to have a full-on
revolution.
Well,
you're never going to fix it. I mean,
yeah, you could. But what you would have to do is you'd have to have a full-on revolution. You'd have to take the Fifth Commandment, throw it out the fucking window. You'd have to be willing to do that. And you'd have to slit throats. And all you would have to. That's the way change actually happens. Because other than that, they're gonna destroy you through the media.
Right.
They'll fucking throw money to make you go away.
Right.
Or they'll just join whatever you're doing, take it over, and
right.
they'll box you out. They'll muscle you out.
But see, this is where Trump. I mean, look, I was watching him one day on CNN, and I'm like, I get how people are excited about him because he's saying what a lot of people say at home. Like, these fucking politicians, they can't get anything done. I can get shit done. Look at what I've done.
But he won't.
He's getting asked on the specifics. He doesn't have an answer. But what was interesting was that, you know.
I loved it. It was like flippant.
Yeah.
What would you do about the Middle East? I'd bomb the hell out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like, that's the shit you hear in a bar.
Exactly. But see, that's where the, look, the very thing that allows someone to achieve, it's Shakespearean in a way, right? The very thing that allows somebody to achieve something great is ultimately your undoing, right? You have to have, okay, he built that from whatever, from $8 million, whatever. Okay, so what he says is, okay, now I can do anything. You know how many fucking trapdoors there are in Congress? Harry Reid's going to be like, oh yeah? You think you're going to get a bill through me? If Trump's president, he's going to get so cock-blocked, he's going to see fucking...
Because what it is if he's going to go around and he's going to expose what the fuck he's done with politicians, like, they can't have this guy. You can't have a guy going in there who doesn't need people's money.
Right.
Who can go in and say whatever the fuck. They can't have a guy like that now.
Well, that's like Bloomberg.
That was like Bloomberg
in New York, in a way.
Yeah,
I mean, and he was good for New York, Bloomberg.
Yeah, but you can, depends on who you are. You can, I think if you have the money, you can get to about like that. You can be mayor, maybe governor. They let you get to that level and, oh, you're running your little state there or whatever.
Right.
We got 49 other ones to beat the shit out of you if you really start fucking with the whole thing. I mean, look, I barely pay attention to this shit, but I don't think it's that,
it's
sorry,
Trump.
The office here.
It's
I don't
Trump.
Think it's that, like, dude, I think they're set up to be bribed.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they're done, like, you watch Obama. Obama's going to go around for the rest of his life. He's going to give speeches.
Yeah.
For $1 million a whack.
Yeah.
The people that gave him money to get... It's literally... Right. You're watching them
right.
wash their bribe money.
Well, it's... Right. Because
none of them make any... Like, the president makes more grand. Like, the senators and shit, they make, like, 200-something grand
yeah.
or, like, 175 grand.
Right.
But, like, 90% of them are multimillionaires. And where he's like, he made a lot of money in the private sector. Like, everything they touch turns to gold.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so fucking, like, almost trans... Like, see-through.
It's see-through.
I don't know how anybody seriously... Like, I can't listen to anybody who uses the term liberal or conservative. If you, I literally just have to walk out of the room.
Well, like, there's
I
no.
Just, but, I look at you like, how the fuck can you sit there and watch this pony and dog show again? To use that hacky fucking expression, but how can you sit there and act like, you know, like I actually respect Republicans more because they I know that they don't want me in their room. That they, I'm not even white enough for them. And they don't really hide it.
And you're fucking
where,
white.
Where Democrats actually pretend like they give a fuck, like a Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton goes to those Bilderberg fucking meetings, which is the closest thing to an Illuminati ever. And then she comes out and acts like she can relate to the guy fucking who drives a snowplow.
Right.
Because and people fucking eat it up. But I think what you said earlier was people that just vote with their wallets.
Yeah, but because look, people who are politicians. I think a very, very small percentage actually wants to do good and change. They want it for their ego. They want to be in charge. They want to be on television. They want to be... And the worst thing that ever happened to our political system is the cable news networks. And one of the things, because it made us more divisive. Like, I go on them. I go on... See, I sit at these tables with these peoples, right? And they got talking points. And it's like Westworld. Remember Westworld? You fucking
yeah.
you, and
it's
they
a
come
great
out.
Movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. They come out of like a fucking robots. They come out of like a hangar in Queens. And the guy on the right says the 8 talking points, you know. And the guy on the left says the 8 talking points. Nobody's talking it, to
talking
each,
other. Each
other. They're talking over each other because it's about ratings. It's about
winning.
It's about winning.
Yeah, you wanna
okay,
win.
And so. And when it becomes about winning and ratings, I mean, that's why, like, you track it. Every election, there's a Bernie Sanders, right? He gets this groundswell of support, right? It was Ralph Nader, it's Bernie Sanders. It's always right. this kind of semi-whack job, but he's not really a whack job.
No, he's the guy.
He's the guy that we're talking about that should be the guy, but
right.
will never be the guy. But then
he's
he goes...
And I vote for him, and everybody said you wasted your vote.
Right.
It's like, how is encouraging more people like him to run a wasted vote? I mean,
yeah.
Because people, I don't... Look, I don't think politicians are bad people. I just feel like you get into that business and then, you know, wanting to do well. I mean, obviously, there's people get into this business because they love comedy. There's other people get into this business because they want to sit in a hot tub with fucking
right.
Porn star.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but the same thing with politicians. I think there's some people that get in there because they want to be president
yeah.
and never have to sit in traffic and have a little song played when they walk into a room. And then there's other people get in there. They love the country. But I just think once you... get into it and then you see what it is.
Right.
I think a lot of good people leave it because they still want to do something good, but they realize that you can't.
It's too big.
That.
It's the mechanism, the whole infrastructure is so out of control. I mean, you know,
I hate that bullshit where it's like, okay, we're going to vote to make whatever, plastic water bottles illegal because they're ruining the ocean. And then, like, but then they tack on all this other shit.
To the bill.
Yeah,
yeah.
To the bill. Like, that shouldn't be legal. So
right.
why can't I just vote for this,
right.
yes or no?
Right.
It's always like, okay, we're going to get rid of this, but then it's legal to kick a baby in the stomach. You know what I mean? It's just like, why can't we just vote on the one fucking thing? Why is that?
Because it's the nature of politics, right? It's all about give and take.
I hate that answer.
It's fucking trade. It's all a trade. That's all this. That's the problem with it, right? It's all about, like, you scratch my back, I
no,
scratch yours.
The problem is that politicians are totally underpaid. The president should have fuck you money. He should have fuck you money. Dude, that job, how much does that job take to get? How much money does it take to get a
quarter
guy?
$250 million.
$250 million
that's
to
what,
get a job.
Right. The pays.
To make $400,000 a fucking year. Who in their right mind is going to take that job unless there's this giant payoff in the end?
Right.
Look at how much fucking money the Clintons are worth.
Yeah.
And they've done nothing but public service.
Right. Right.
And then they have their side businesses
right.
that all the politicians just give them the fucking card. They're the most corrupt fucking...
Right.
I'm so sick of Clintons and Bushes, and
yeah.
I know the next person's going to be just as fucking bad.
And it's either going to be one of them.
I just want a different last name.
It's going to be probably one of the two. The best person... there's a school of thought that the person that's benefiting the most from Trump is Jeb Bush, because all the other politicians and all the other Republican candidates are kind of trying to figure out what to do, and Bush just lays in the weeds, lets it implode, and then he steps forward and go, you know, it's like the crazy uncle and the sane uncle at Christmas, right? You let the crazy uncle fucking fall off the rails, and then the sane one walks up and goes, do you want him or do you want me? And it's going to be Bush Clinton again.
Nice. Well, it'll be Bush Clinton again, not because of Donald Trump. It'll be Bush Clinton again because the people up top who really run shit, you know, they know these people. It's like, you know, you have your stores that you go to, and they do too, and their store, Clinton and Bush has worked out good for them, so they'll stick with the familiar.
Yeah.
You know, that guy from Jersey is like, I mean, he's...
I thought he had a shot in a way. I don't know, Chris Christie.
He's one of those guys where he has glimpses of it, and then he just sounds like some guy at a tailgate. And he just doesn't quite have it. I like who's he? Is it Huckabee?
Rubio?
Huckabee.
No. Huckabee.
Yeah, I like Huckabee. I like
Huckabee goes a little too religious for me at times. Like he just says like everything's sort of like.
Who's he? Who's the other guy there? The son of the guy there.
Chafee?
No, the guy who's now just left politics and has a website saying you're gonna lose all your fucking money.
Oh, Rand Paul.
Yeah, I like Rand Paul.
Yeah. Well, Rand Paul was a fucking hawk. And now he's actually become an isolationist, and all the fucking Republicans hate him for it. And he completely changed his tune, which is fine, you know? That's the other thing, is nobody wants to adapt. But you ever hear a politician go, you know what? You know what? I changed my mind.
I watched the Republican debate was because Trump was there. I'm an idiot. I don't know any of this shit. I don't even know what an isolationist is.
You know what you're talking about. You know what you... Shut up. You know what you're talking about. You're
smart. No, I don't know who these guys are.
But, look, I mean...
When you just started, this guy's an isolationist, he was working with them and that type of shit. I'm like the guy who only watches the Super Bowl. You're the guy who's playing like fantasy football.
You're fucking, you know what you're talking about. All right, so you have an animated series coming out, all right?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
This is Netflix on the phone telling me to make it funnier.
It's F is for funny.
F is for family.
Family. No, it's F is for funny. Isn't that the name of it?
No.
F is for family.
F is for family.
So, you said you wanted to do it as a way to kind of get people in the head of what it was like in the 70s growing up and sort of talk about some of these un-PC things. Go ahead.
No, this is why I did it. I was, you know, started in 1992 as a stand-up, and I used to tell family stories, and they got big laughs.
Mm.
And then somewhere in the mid-2000s, those laughs were turning into groans and... And what I realized is that I was an older guy now in this new generation that wore helmets when they rode bikes and had play dates. Jesus fucking Christ.
How do we, you know what we do here? Do this. Hang on.
Well, there we go. We hit the volume back.
Yeah.
Just remember to turn that back on.
Yeah.
So anyways, so this whole new generation came about, and they couldn't they couldn't fucking relate to it.
Right.
So I was frustrated because I knew that they were funny.
You were frustrated because you knew that.
I knew.
So what kind of stories were we talking about? Because
we grew up
the same way. I'm sure.
Let me just finish here.
Yeah.
So one day I was walking my dog and I just thought, what if I just animated them? What if I animated these stories, and I was just going to make little 5-minute vignettes. That's all I was going to do, and. You know, exaggerate everything, and it would be loosely based on not only my experience, but just, you know, other kids. I remember just shit that I saw and just growing up in the 70s. And, but you know, I mean, I never got around to doing it. So one day I was taking a general meeting with Wild West, Vince Vaughn's company, and I had already been through the development process. It's like, I don't want to try to do a development deal. It takes you off the table for a fucking year, and then it doesn't get picked up, and then all this other shit. I could have got acting work in. I couldn't because I was stuck in this deal. So you guys make movies. I'd love to be in one. That's it. And then I go, all right, well, okay. And then I was walking out. I was like, you know, I kind of got this idea for a cartoon, and they fucking yanked me. I was literally walking out the door. Yanked me back in. They were saying that they wanted to do a cartoon. So 4.5, 5 fucking years later, here we are. And
I'm glad you said that, because you go home and people like I think we grew up similar, like, okay, it's Northeast, you know, how come you don't have a TV show yet? They think you pick up the phone and go, hey, CBS, I'm ready now.
Dude, this thing almost didn't get picked up. We fucking brought this thing around. We brought it over to
you have a show. You have a guy from Simpsons, Michael Price.
We got him on. That was a game changer.
But why
he's basically the guy, you know, I created the show with him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like I created it with you know,
everybody at Wild West and the writers. And we know that's, you know, yeah, that credit thing is fucking weird.
Well, how come it almost didn't get picked up? What happened?
Well, we couldn't sell the idea. We were going around. We went to the Adult Swim. And we just showed up. And we were talking to like some kid who's like 25, and he's just looking. We go, okay.
With a plaid shirt and a beard, probably.
No. He was cool, but he was just looking at us like, who are these fucking old guys? We're like, oh, it's an animated show. It takes place in the 70s, 10 years before you were born. Yeah, we're gonna fuck off now, you know. And it didn't fit.
Yeah.
And I love Adult Swim. I love Axe Cop and all that shit. I watch it all the fucking time. Archer. They're FXX. Whatever. I like cartoons. Yeah. So. I thought it was a done deal, and I didn't give a shit. I was like, fuck it, I'll just be a comedian that sells tickets on the road, and I can go to the movies whenever I want. I made it. That's still good.
Right.
And then Vince was like, let's go over to Netflix. So I went over to Netflix, and they were still kind of looking like, because they knew me from the specials, and they knew Vince from the movies, and then we were saying we wanted to do a cartoon, and they were just looking
at us. Is Vince in the room with you?
Vince is hardcore. Like, he went in and was pitching the show. He was there at the fucking Adult Swim thing. We came in, we rolled in with like 15 people deep, thinking we were going to be the big conference table, and we're sitting around this little coffee table with our fucking knees up by our ears, talking to this 20-something-year-old. Dude, it was fucking hilarious. I was just sitting there going like, this looks like something out of the Larry Sanders Show. This is crazy. So, but they were just, I think they just were like, obviously, Vince, A-list movie star, he's like, he's behind this idea, and they liked what I was doing, and, you know, they didn't have anything to lose. They're like, all right, fuck it, you know, write a pilot. Let's see what it looks like. What do we care? You know, here's a couple of bucks. Come back in fucking 6 months. We'll see what this looks like. And then they really liked it. Next thing you know, they ordered 6. And then Netflix came up with the idea to serialize it, which, for people at home, I didn't even know what this meant, which means, like, one episode leads into the other. And
so you have an arch over the course of 10 episodes or whatever.
And I hated the idea. I was like, nah, I want to just stand alone like The Simpsons and blah, blah, blah. Thank God. Smarter people were like, no, we should do this because it totally changed the dynamic of the show.
How so?
Just the stories just got so much deeper. And you just were thinking like, it wasn't like, it'd be like going from trying to write a standard joke, which takes like 20 seconds, 30 seconds to do, to try to turn it into a 10-minute piece. How do I keep the fucking...
And it forces you to explore layers that you weren't going to explore if you were going to just take it in little episodes and little vignettes.
So it's crazy, it's over the top, but it's actually, you know, it's got a good heart. It is a family show, but it's more along the lines of the kind of families that I grew up, where there was, you know, screaming and yelling, four-letter words flying around.
Some racial epithet.
My parents weren't like that, but it was more just like the screaming and yelling, not apologizing. Like, how we handle race on the show is it's mainly on the TV, which, like, what's on TV, how crazy it is, and how that was just like, I mean, if you watch... You don't have too much of it on MeTV because it's such only the super politically correct things. But like, I watched like The Goodbye Girl, because I love Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah. I was watching that on the road, and it just, New York, it's just all fucking white people until his girlfriend gets robbed, and it's like two Puerto Ricans and a black guy, and they're like, hey, whitey, get the fuck away. I was right in the middle of this fucking romantic comedy, and it was just this, it was like literally like one of those, who's the guy, Hugh, the English guy who got the hooker?
Oh, Hugh Grant.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of movies from back then.
Right.
And then, but it was in the 70s, but it had that scene, which would never be there now. Would never be there now. So that's what I love about the shit back then, is those what the fuck moments. Yeah. Like, dude, this was like a romantic comedy, and you had that level.
But that was the culture. I mean, in our neighborhood, it was learned racism. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, right? Right. If a black person came into our neighborhood, it was not good. Right? Yeah. And my uncle's a Georgetown dentistry school, a dentist, okay? But that's old school Italian mentality. He thought all blacks like were on welfare, didn't like black people, wouldn't wait on black people. Black guy comes into his office with a toothache on a Saturday. I'm with my uncle cleaning up the office. I'm like 11. Doesn't have his fucking motherfucking motherfucker. Puts on a work shirt, gets a mop and a bucket, lights up a cigarette, goes out and just starts mopping the floor. The guy's got a toothache. He's in the waiting room. He goes, hey, is the dentist in? He goes, nope, gone for the day. And the guy gets up and walks out. He would not. He was out of his mind.
My dad is a dentist. Yeah. My dad treated everybody to a fault.
Yeah.
I remember I never got a fucking lunch. Some homeless guy would come in. I'd be like, Dad, just get the guy pain medication. Let's get the fuck out of here. And he'd be like, no, I can't do it. And I always say, why? And he said, I took an oath. You take an oath as a dentist to be, to if someone's in pain. He literally said, if I knew somebody was in pain and I didn't do something to get him out of it, it would bother me.
Yeah.
I'm just, you fucking straight-laced. All right. Numb him up and I'll go get a fucking slice of pizza. And he would numb the guy up and I would stand there wolfing down a slice of pizza. But, you know.
But that culture, it was, what struck me in sort of reading about this and what you're doing is, you talked about sort of wanting to kind of address PC issues and how things maybe weren't PC then and how they are now. And I think that's right. I do think it's a different, it was a different time. It was a different culture, right?
Yeah. Like, both good and bad.
Both good and bad. Like we had, again, we had a guy who had like a candy shop, right? And sometimes you go in and you're like 10 and you didn't have like an extra nickel. And if you didn't have an extra nickel, he wouldn't let you have it and come back. We started calling him John the Jew. We don't even know if he was a Jew or not, right? That came from, that's learned behavior, right? Thank God it's sort of not in my vernacular anymore. But like, I think that like, you do stand up today and you say to somebody, are you Puerto Rican? And they look Puerto Rican. People go, and all I said was, are you Puerto Rican? I didn't make a Puerto Rican joke. And so what's become, the and Seinfeld said it, right? And I agree with him. I don't know how you feel about it. Like, you can't go to two colleges because it's so PC now.
I think he was more saying, I don't enjoy doing them. It's like you can't do a college. Mm. You can do it. Like, it's not as bad. Like, I really feel like it's a, the people that complain and all that type of shit, it's just, it's a very small group of people and they're bullies. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to bring this up because I don't want to throw fucking gas on the fire and just, you know, to get it going again. But there was a comic, okay, and this person had a like a big movie coming out.
Mm.
And they just go into the archives. And, oh, 3 years ago you said this. What does that mean? And it's just like, well, where the fuck have you been for 3 years? Right. It's like they wait and they wait and they wait till they know they got you by the short hairs. And you got, because the thing is if they can get you to apologize, then that's a big feather in their cap. And it just, it's pumping up like this paper tiger. And it fucking blows my mind that people sit around. It doesn't blow my mind because that's how it just fucking works. So there's somebody fucking with our food supply. That this state is running out of fucking water. The Colorado River doesn't even make it to the fucking ocean anymore. This baby seal's washing up under the fucking shores because they're starving to death because we fished out the fucking ocean. Never talk about that shit.
Right.
But a comic tells a fucking joke in a strip mall.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're talking about it.
Right.
You know, one person gets offended. That's another thing too. Like, every one of those things, it's like a comic is guilty of telling a joke in a comedy club. That's all they're guilty of.
Right.
And then what I love too is people get offended by the joke. And it's just like, he or she didn't tell you the joke.
Right.
If you want to get mad that you heard the joke,
right,
it's the person that blogs about it. It's the person that takes the video or records it. The comedian is just guilty of being in a nightclub.
Right.
Where people voluntarily came in and telling jokes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, just because you're sitting at home eating cornflakes now and you hear the nightclub, that's really on you.
Right.
You don't want to hear the nightclub, don't go to the nightclub, and also don't fucking listen to it. But if all of a sudden it just slips into your world, get mad at the person that illegally fucking like uploaded the video that they're not supposed to put. But and I really don't feel that like, you know, I just don't feel that like networks and the advertisers get behind their performers. That's what they should do. We'll see what happens to me. All the fucking shit I've said on my podcast and all that, this show's coming out, there's no fucking way, if this thing is any sort of a hit, that at some point there's not going to be somebody saying...
But the part of the problem is that you mentioned blogging, and I'm glad you did, because I feel strongly like social media has emboldened people to the point where they maybe not even wouldn't have had... They probably maybe possibly wouldn't even have had that... Let me back up. They would not have had that opinion if they didn't have an outlet to express it, right? Like, so just because you can... Now people just, boom, I didn't like something. So it empowers them. Twitter, right?
Facebook. It's an easy story. It's an easy story in the news. And they act like 40 people are 40 million people, and they're not.
Right.
To be honest with you, who really gets offended by comedians? Who is walking around... Like, when was the last time you told somebody you're a comedian and be like, oh, you guys are so offensive? They always think it's cool.
Right.
Generally speaking. Right. And there's this small group of fucking people. And what I love, too, is they only get offended by shit that has to do with them. Right. I had a show recently, right?
And I was standing on stage. It was a casino. And, dude, these fucking people were hammered. Hammered. And there was this guy yelling at me the whole fucking show, screaming and yelling. Not bad shit, but just yelling. I kept telling him to shut up. He wouldn't shut the fuck up. I was on stage for 90 fucking minutes. I finally just go, I just snapped. I was like, dude, are you fucking retarded? Shut up. All right? Jesus fucking Christ, right? End of the show. Who comes up to me? Two fucking people who have a special needs kid, and they go, we came to see you because you don't make, you said that you don't make, do jokes about special needs kids, which I don't.
Right.
And it's like, I didn't fucking do a bit on a special needs person, okay?
But
I
they came up to
and I used that
the word retarded.
Dude, right. They fucking crumpled up the brochure with my face, gave me the tickets back, did the whole fucking thing. And this is what kills me.
Right.
This is what kills me. If I had used the word faggot when I talked to him, those two people would not have been offended and would not have come up to me. And that's why it's bullshit.
Exactly.
It's like, I was on stage. I fucking made fun of plane crashes. I talked about sinking cruise ships. I made fun of Bruce Jenner. And if you wanted to be a douche about it, you would say, oh, he's making fun of all transgender people, right?
Right.
And I wasn't even doing that. But all of that was fine. Right. All of that was funny.
Right.
An hour and 28 minutes into the hour and 30 minute set, right, I finally fucking snapped. What I'm guilty of is losing my temper and using a hurtful word. I didn't do a fucking bit about that. Yeah. Do you think I would really like deliberately go there and try and hurt you and bring up that level of pain?
Yeah.
I would never do that. Right. But I am a human being. And these two people who came up to me, it's like, dude, you're telling me you never snapped and you never used, right, you never said something that you didn't fucking mean? That's what losing your temper is.
Right.
And I just want to be like, you know what, dude? You go on stage for fucking 90 minutes, right, and deal with these fucking animals.
Right.
You do exactly that. You do that. And when you snap, I want to hear the fuck, I want to see the flowers, right, coming out of your fucking mouth. You know what I mean?
But it ties back to your show in the 70s because faggot, retarded, those were terms that I grew up with that we all used regularly. But you can't use them now.
Which meant stupid and
which
douchebag.
Which meant stupid and douchebag.
Yeah.
And like, we weren't judging like if you were gay or anything, right? But it just ties back perfectly to the idea of the show, and I'm glad you're doing your show because, you know, my father used to call Japanese people Japs because he was in fucking World War II, yeah, and they were the enemy. Did he hate black? Did he punch Japanese people out on the sidewalk? No, but like that's what that you know you are your it's nature nurture. You are your environment. You are where you are in history, and you're affected by your environment, right? So now you can't somebody born in 1980, like you said, who's, I don't know what, 25, 30, whatever, they hear the word faggot or retarded, and they're like, they recoil. They're like, oh my
but
God.
But it's good that they do,
right,
because we never knew that we were hurting people, but we didn't mean anything by it. We didn't realize that we were hurting,
right,
people. So I think it's a good thing, but it's like, you gotta like, it's in my fucking
it's who you
hard
are.
Drive. It's not who I am, it's just how people express themselves. So like, now, you know, I don't use those words,
right,
but every once in a while, if I snap,
right,
and if that's I the snap, thing.
Clearly
you lose
you snap.
Your fucking temper. It's like, you know, your fucking brain's going 90 miles, and you're gonna something's gonna come out.
Right.
It's not gonna be good. It's not gonna be good. And there's another thing too. For those two fucking assholes who came up to me, okay, it's for them to sit there and act like they never snapped and said anything fucked up.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how would you like it if I then crumpled up your family photo and broke the picture frame in this big dramatic thing and handed it back to you after you just did whatever you did for a living for me,
right,
for an hour and a fucking half?
Right.
Give me a fucking break,
right,
man.
Right, right. But everybody's empowered. I really think social media has empowered people to have way more opinions.
They
than
have
fucking
no life. Fucking power. They don't have any fucking
power. They think
power.
They do. What are you talking about? Some fucking Yahoo goes on Facebook and fucking Twitter and starts whatever.
And
people sit around and watch the Oscars and fucking tweet all night about saying shitty things about the actors and people's dresses when these people work their whole life to get there. What kind of a fucking society are we living in?
A very childish one.
Those motherfuckers, half of them are fucking comics that we know who are doing it to get more followers so they can eventually be in movies, so they can eventually go to the fucking Academy Awards and get an Oscar, and they're fucking hypocrites. Now, I'm not a saint, but you know, is that really want to spend your time just shitting on everybody through fucking social media? I mean,
look, shitting on people has been done since the beginning of time.
Right.
All right, the Native Americans were sitting there going, look at this fucking asshole doing that teepee. I hate the way he fucking arranges the sticks. He's such a douche. He should be gathering fruit. I don't like when he comes on the hunt. He's an asshole. And then he comes over, hey, what's going on, buddy? Like, people have always been doing that. Now they just have an outlet. You can't, as a performer, take anything any of these animals on social media says seriously. And you can't go back and forth with them, talk to them.
Oh, no,
I look, if somebody is, like, breaking my balls in a funny way,
yeah,
like sports or just yeah, giving me shit about yeah, how I look, and it makes me laugh,
yeah,
I'll talk to, I'll fucking retweet it if it's funny enough. But, like, if someone is just saying, like, just like just hurtful, over the top,
oh, yeah, horrific,
you don't even fucking respond.
No, when I did, when the thing went down with Opie and Anthony and the whole St. Pat's Cathedral and all that stuff, when I was involved in that, whatever, and they, some of those guys came after me, it was just, I'm not fucking engaging you douchebags, because then you fucking empower them. My mother told me gave me the best piece of advice ever. If you want to hurt somebody, ignore them. Just ignore them. That's what you do with bullies. It was interesting because there was a psychologist, I guess Megyn Kelly.
I don't think you do that with a bully. If you're on a bus with a bully and every day he's fucking with you.
No, you got to punch him in the face.
Yeah, you got to punch him in the face. Yeah,
yeah.
But then, these guys are on the other side of the computer screen, so you can't just ignore them.
You just fucking ignore them, and it crushes their fucking soul.
Back in the day, you could block the bully on the bus. Exactly. He wasn't allowed to come into your general seating area. Yeah, I think you could do that.
So you talked about getting comfort level on stage, right? And like kind of analogize it to high school. And there's a cool kind of quote that you said that I wanted to sort of throw out. You said you're working toward getting to some kind of level of comfort that you had when you were in high school, in the high school cafeteria talking to your friends. Art, you talk about art, which to me is what art is. Getting comfortable enough to tap into that gift that you have, right?
Right.
When did you kind of start to feel like you got there? Because it takes us a while as comics to kind of like, and did you get out of your way? Did you say something to yourself at some point? Did you just go, you know, I got to get out of my own way? Or how did it work for you?
No, it was just going up every night for fucking,
yeah, you just get so
20 fucking years. And yeah, then you just get more comfortable and more comfortable. And then you have better relationships with the clubs. They know who you are. You're selling some tickets. Your leeway gets a little bit, you know. Yeah. When you're first coming in as a feature act or a host, it's like, I need to kill. That tightens you up.
Right.
I need to kill. I got to get in.
Right.
This is my shot. If I don't get in here, it could be another year and a half, two, three fucking years again. Before, might have to be another club owner running this club before I get. So, you know, I always have empathy for hosts and features as far as, like, the material that they're doing. But once, you know, you get a rapport with people, you've done the fucking job,
yeah,
enough times that if something fucked up happens, they're going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
You guys have had beers together, so then you can be a little more, you get a little more leeway.
Right.
So, but still, it took me, you know, I came up with, you know, I graduated, I think a lot of it for me was figuring out how my brain worked.
What do you mean?
Like, what blocks me and how come on this show I was free, how come on this show I was blocked? And I just sort of undid those knots until the whole thing just became like a as much as I could get it, like a free flowing thing.
Did you find you tighten up? Because I did early on, like if there were people in the room like auditioning you for something, that would have an effect on you on stage a little bit, as opposed.
Yeah, way back in the day it did.
Right.
But then what I ended up doing was, this is the dysfunction of me, I would use that nervousness that they were judging me to turn that into anger.
Like, who the fuck
at
are
them?
You?
Like, who the fuck are you to fucking judge me? You know, fuck these people. They either want me or they don't. I'm waiting for you to touch me on the head with your magic wand that telling me I can make it now. Fuck you. I'm making it either way, which is hilarious. Then you meet them and they were always nice. Like, God, that was really good. You know? Then you felt stupid. Like, I had to do that on so many gigs just...
To get your head. That's a really good way to say it. It's I think every comic, every performer, I think the room feels a little different when there's somebody in the back of the room that matters.
Yeah, and if you just knew that they want you to be good. Like, they're sitting there going, fuck, I hope I find somebody tonight.
It's like producers and directors who cast for movies. They tell you all the time, we want you to be good at the
please
room.
Please come and blow us away.
Right in the beginning you think, they want to reject me.
Who are you to think that you can be in this fucking movie? It's just like, you know,
the guy's like, I want to get home and fucking eat with my kid. I hope you nail this so I can go home.
Right? Yeah, it's like, no, we want to cast this thing so we can start shooting this thing so we can put it out and hopefully it's a hit so we get to do it again. So
you also talked about going at your own pace, and you analogize it to reading and like you know, you said that the guys that don't start to listen to other voices and just do their own thing are the guys that make it. And that really struck me, because did you ever find, like, you see, you know, so-and-so comic going blazes and kicking ass, but he's not the kind of comic you are? Or, like, you'll see, like, alternative comics were kind of getting really hot at one time. And do you ever have your moments where you're like, well, maybe I should go beat that?
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah. You start going... I think we all, when everybody saw Dan Cook blow up, everybody's like, I need to get on MySpace, and then I'll get on MySpace, and then I'll have a million fans. And then quickly you realize you're not Dane.
Yeah.
And it's like he had a special thing, special connection with, like, what you were looking at was like a Beatlemania thing. So for everybody to go on there and think that they were going to have that.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I tell some of the guys that I work with nowadays that are on their way up is that you have to kind of, you got to figure out kind of who you are, and whoever you are, you go on that road and you have to be okay. It's like that Grateful Dead song where they say, you know, when you're something about choosing a path, and if you go, if no one should follow, that path was meant for your steps alone, is like, you know, if applied correctly. Because you, a serial killer can listen to that song too. Like, hey, nobody else kills people, but this feels good to me. I'm talking about, like, artistically speaking.
Right.
You have to. You're gonna be happier, I think, in the end, if you did it the way that you wanted to do it. You know, that whole thing going down swinging with what you want.
Were you sort of a different comic in terms of your voice at one point, and then sort of fell into the voice that you have now?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think in the beginning you're just so enamored with people that are professionals that you can't have, like, I was influenced by Brian Regan for a while. People were like, you sounded like Regan. I moved like him. I enunciated some stuff like him, and it was one of those things where that's just part of being a comic 4, 5, 6 years in. Like you don't know what you're doing. And you're like, and you're just like grabbing at shit.
What you're doing is you're executing technique as opposed to, like, really who you are and sort of tapping into stuff that you want to reveal about yourself. And, you know, for me too, it took a while to kind of go, you know, really, like, it was one day at a Thanksgiving dinner with a bunch of friends who were hammered, and I told them a story about how I pulled my pants down on 86th Street in Manhattan and told a newsstand guy to fuck me in the ass over a plastic bag because he told me he'd fuck me in the ass if I didn't leave. And they were on the floor, and they go, you talking about your act? I'm like, nah, nobody. And I started talking about that stuff, and it opened up a whole, and it's who I am,
right?
For good or for bad, it's who I am. Like, I think I want to change the world. I think so. I say stuff to people, and my wife's like, you got to let it go, and I can't, and whatever. So I think that's, you talk about the art of it. People come and see you, they're not going to see anybody else like you. That's art.
Hopefully.
No. Like, my wife works in museums, right? So, like, if you go to a museum and I say, oh, you go, you say, yeah, I saw a painter. How was it? It was all right. And you hadn't seen it before? No. Well, is that art? Isn't it supposed to move you, take you to a place you didn't think you could go, make it a little uncomfortable? That's why this whole PC thing, I'm fascinated.
No, I don't. I think it's whatever you want to do. Like, there's that whole thing about, oh, this guy sold out, she sold out, or whatever. Like, I don't believe in that. I think that the only person that really knows whether they sold out or not is the artist, and basically it's up to them. Like, you, like, as me as a fan of bands and actors and stuff like that, can feel that somebody sold out. But if the performer is okay with what they did and they can sleep at night, what really is selling out, even if you're not in this business, is basically you do something, okay, for money or whatever,
right?
Or to get a position, or to get in good with somebody, you do something.
Yeah.
And afterwards, you feel like you need a shower.
Right.
And when you take the shower, you think about what you did, and then you have to yell out loud in the shower, like, ah! That's when you sold out. You sold yourself out. But, like, for fans to just sit there and be like, oh, this band sold out, or this performer sold, oh, we got his haircut, he fucking sold out. It's like, you don't have any fucking idea what's going on or why they're doing what they're doing.
Nor do you have a right, you know? I mean, it's that person's
art. They have a right to say it, but I mean, but if you get to a level of maturity, you realize that, like, who you are when you're 23 is not who you are when you're 33 or 43. And that doesn't mean, like, yeah, man, you give in to the man. Different thing, you get married, you become a parent.
Right.
you know, like I think a lot of your 20s for me was me just fucking taking out my childhood on people. And it wasn't
so. How so? You mean like
just being like fucking, I was angry, I was distant, I was terrible with women. Like, I broke a couple of hearts, and it was just like, I hurt a lot of people. And I have guilt about it to this day, and I just wish that I knew more about life so I wouldn't have hurt those people, and I wouldn't have done the things that I did. But also, it's like you can't pick what the fuck happens to you and how you're shaped or whatever. But like, so for me, I just look at people up to right about 32, 33. And if I don't see somebody trying to turn it around, then you're just sort of like, all right, this person is an unexamined fucking asshole. I'm going to get away from them. But like, if I see somebody trying,
right,
as big of a fucking jerk off as I was, I can't sit there and just see somebody now and just be like, well, I don't do that anymore, so I'm going to judge you. It's like, no, I did all of that.
Do you ever give some advice to younger comics or people in this business or at all, or just in life, where you go, you know what, I kind of was you, and maybe don't do that because I did it and it didn't work well for me in terms of behavior?
Only if somebody asks me. Yeah. If I'm watching somebody do something, if they ask me, because I'm not going to... I'm not going to butt into... Look, obviously, if you're taking a glass, I'm going to smash it over someone's head. You got to... But I mean, if you're... Look, if I see somebody... I guess if I saw somebody get to a certain level in this business and then start treating people in a certain way, like rudely or whatever, something like that, that is something that really bothers me when I do see that. I saw somebody do that in particular, and it like bothered me for like 10 straight fucking days, to the point I was saying shit as I'm driving, talking to my windshield like I was talking to the
person. Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah.
Reverse arguments. Yeah, yeah.
Just being like...
Yeah. Yeah, it's like crazy.
Who the fuck do you think you are that you can fucking talk to somebody like that?
Right.
And you know, and like, right, you're not even that good.
Hey, well, as we wrap
up. And it always gets really mean and shit.
As we wrap up.
Then of course next time I see him, I go, hey buddy, how's it going?
That's because you worked it out in the car with the windshield. So do you, as we finish this up here, did you find that there were cliques in comedy and some pretension, and how did you deal with that? Because that was a little bit of a... For me, I noticed it. And I always thought the whole point of this was sort of to embrace all kinds of different stuff and be open-minded, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, definitely. I don't know, like, at the height of that fucking alternative scene, there was definitely a lot of shots that were thrown at...
Club comics.
And
did
like,
you do those rooms or try to do those rooms?
Yeah, I did them. I did them
for you because I could see.
I had fun, but I also found like there was a look. The alt scene was started by club comics, monster club comics. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys I used to see initially when the alt rooms first started, I mean, it was fucking ridiculous. It was like David Cross, Dana Gould, Bob Odenkirk.
Mm-hmm.
Like the new guy was Patton Oswalt. Right. I mean,
Louis and Mark were the newer guys.
Dude, they were monsters, fucking monsters. And now you were watching these guys who knew how to play a hell room, stretch out in front of a crowd that was up for something a little different.
Right.
And dude, it was amazing.
Right.
But then what happened was inadvertently they created a scene that somebody who did know how to do a hell room could start in. And they were sort of in this comedy womb, and I just felt like
it was just sort of
like, you ever play like a comedy club where you just feel like everybody in this crowd grew up on the same block, and all I have to do is just stay on the block and I'm gonna kill, but if I go 1 foot off, they're just gonna be staring at me. I just felt like those alt rooms, after a while it was like the crowd looked like the comic. They were all this, and they were all just agreeing with each other, and it was like, it kind of distilled out one of the most fun things of doing stand-up is saying something that makes the crowd go, what the fuck?
Right.
And I don't even mean just like, you know, trashing a religious figure. I just mean just some crazy thought.
Yeah.
Or like anything, just, like an Andy Kaufman thing, just freaking them out a little.
It doesn't even have to be that crazy. You talked about going 1 foot off the block. 1 foot off the block is talking about race in an alt room. If you start talking about race in an alt room, and I don't mean in an offensive way, just race, like, they get tight. They get tight because they don't want, I don't think they're comfortable with that comedy that kind of goes there. they want it to sort of be nice and neutral to everybody. Funny, but like not sort of taking sides on issues.
Right. I haven't had that experience. My experience was more like when I first got in there, it almost seemed like when at the height of the pretentiousness in those fucking rooms. Remember one time I was doing Pete Holmes' podcast, and Pete goes, you know, I was talking to another comic the other day, there's alt hack. There is alt, like he'd say, like, wait, like, yeah, Pete, you think so? You think there's a little recipe in there that you can do and make? And it's like, just like, they were so sucking their own dicks after a while. And I'm not trashing Pete Holmes, and I don't give a fuck if he hears this anyways. I love Pete. You surfing douchebag. I'm fucking with him. I just want to see that 8-foot guy in a surfboard. looking like a goddamn boogie board. I love Pete. But it bugged me when he said that. Like, can you believe it? Yeah, dude. We fucking make fun of you guys as much as you make fun of us. But I just felt like at the height of that alt scene, if you went in there, it almost, what I felt, it wasn't the topic. It almost felt like if you were trying, if you were actually trying to entertain them and put on a show, it became like you had to go up there and you had to have I'm still in my pajamas energy.
Yeah.
Or it was, you were considered like you were the...
And why do you think that is? What is that? Is that sort of insecurity?
I wasn't in the rooms long enough. Well, look, dude, in the clubs, if you go in there, hey, I was fucking jerking off the other day. I mean, you can go the other way with it.
Yeah, but we don't have to go the other way.
But they didn't have to do that either. But the truth was that existed in both rooms. Like, the alt guys were not saying, hey, I was fucking jerking the... No! But they were. You could go in there and you could fucking, you know, nerd out about whatever superhero movie was coming and do fucking 20 minutes on it.
That's all.
And they would sit there and listen to it. And they would sit there and be like, oh my God, this crowd is so smart. And it's like, why? Because when you do that joke in front of a mechanic, he's a fucking moron. This guy who can take apart a car and put it back together is now dumb because he doesn't know about the fucking Avengers or the X-Men. It's stupid. I just felt like what made the rooms great also kind of...
Yeah.
But now I think that they've come to a...
I feel like
it's much that, it's much better.
I mean, I do them and I feel like I can do what I do in a club and I can do there, you know, with the energy that I like.
I love doing alt rooms. I love them
because I also like that you can tell stories. I'm comfortable telling stories in a club now, but it took me a while to get there. Earlier on, I felt comfortable in an alt room because that was the environment for it. But I could never figure out, and I still think it exists, and I can't figure out the thing you said, which I totally get, which is why you can't look like you're trying to be funny when you are labeled a comedian on a comedy show. I don't know where that came from.
Because I think it was, I don't know what it was. I thought it was like you had to act
is
like...
It pretension?
I don't know what it was. I don't want to shit on it, but like, I think it's in a good place right now. Yeah. I think the clubs are in a good place. They were like, you know, there was a reason that alt room started, and it was because of, you know, there was the comics with the fucking sports jackets doing the airplane material.
Right.
And going to the dentist.
And to the credit of those guys, they wanted to talk about other stuff that was a little more thoughtful and whatever, and those audiences didn't want that or wouldn't connect with that. You know, but now I think you can do it in both places.
Yeah, at this point, I think you can, because I think that alternative comedy became club comedy and that it became mainstream.
Yeah.
Like, if you've noticed, like, so many comedy bits now, the payoff is there's no punchline, it's just awkward. And I thought that came out of the alt scene. And I liked that at first. You know this business. Something comes out, it's new, and then they just do it to death. The fucking werewolves and vampires and zombies and shit. So I like that because there was a truth in it. Because life doesn't necessarily have a punchline. There is sort of, you know, somebody says something completely fucked up and everybody sits around like going, what the fuck? So I did like that. But then, of course, it was then done to death.
Yeah.
At which point it's then into the mainstream. But, you know, I still think despite the fact that it was comics performing to basically themselves in a way, there was still monster fucking comics that I'm a huge fan of that came out of the scene.
Yeah, and there's still,
the only thing that
there's
I
still
was,
good comics
the
coming out thing, of it now. New comics coming out of it are good.
Yeah, and the only thing that I was truly defensive about was their cavalier attitude towards the club, some of them. Yeah. Like, we were a bunch of dick joke telling comics and that what we did was bullshit. But then what would happen is,
is you'd do one of those fucking radio gigs, and they'd have alt and fucking club comics, and then they'd always put us on last. Mm. And these guys, and then those alt guys who allegedly were higher brow than what we were doing, went on early. Mm. And were trying to trade up and get the fuck out of there because they didn't want to go out in front of the fucking drunk mechanics that we're used to performing in front of. I don't know why I keep picking mechanics, but like, so, and then they were extra friendly. Hey, buddy, hey, how's it going, you know? You fucking walk into their room, they look at you like you fucking kicked their dog.
Who's this alien from another planet?
Yeah, and all of a sudden you're in some fucking, you know, chuckle hut, and then they're just like, hey, all of a sudden they got a fucking personality.
You want to go to the Waffle House?
After the show? That was, but even then, that was just, it was just funny.
Yeah, it's all.
So, I didn't want to do this. And by the way, getting back to F's for Family, F's for Family is not a big thing about race, by the way. It's just, it's just, I'm hoping it's just funny.
I'm sure it's people are. Funny. But, I like that you're tapping into who you were and who you are in that era because, you know,
I'm also double insulated for people who get offended. I can be like, it's a cartoon.
It's
a cartoon. It was the 70s.
And I'm a kid.
And it's the 70s. A cartoon in the 70s. People talk this way and these aren't real
they
people.
They did. I mean, I just interviewed Norman Lear for the podcast. We were talking about All in the Family and what they got away with and how they did it. And he goes, I was seeing some sitcoms where the big dilemma every week was, I burned the roast and the boss is coming. I got two dates in one night.
Right.
My car's broken down and I got to pick up my girlfriend. And he's like, but we were having conversations, friends, family, about Vietnam and Nixon and this and that. And it's like, why can't that be part of the landscape?
I got to be honest with you, it's never going to happen again.
Oh, never.
Because I have to tell you, All in the Family is like, it's like watching a play.
Oh my God, it's that.
A just good one. It's very hard to write.
Your jaw hits the fucking floor when you say, I can't, this is CBS. They fucking said the shit that we're talking about.
No, but like the comedic fucking timing.
Oh, that too, yeah. I mean, all of it.
Of Rob Reiner, when he would get into it with...
with Archie.
Archie, yeah. But what's the actor's name?
Carol O'Connor.
Carol O'Connor, oh my God. When those two would get going, like...
And the content, like the network wouldn't let you talk about that stuff today. Like you can't on cable.
Yeah, but it's not their fault though. It's not their fault. You would make the same decisions if you were sitting behind the desk, or you know something, you wouldn't last. Dude, everybody goes into something. Nobody wants to make a hacky piece of shit. Everybody wants to go in and make Goodfellas. You want to make the All in the Family. Yeah. That's what you want to do. But you go in there and there's 9 million fucking channels, and there's all this fucking money. And then
is that what changed it? That they need to grab eyeballs and if you
I have no idea. I think a fucking zillion things moved a micro inch, and now we're a zillion miles over this way. So now it's unfathomable that you could get something. But I also have to say, like some of the greatest TV shows I've ever seen have, you know, not only were back then but are on right now, like. Just some of the dramas and the level of writing on some of these shows.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were on Breaking Bad for 2 seasons, and you...
Yeah, I just started watching the show Peaky Blinders, which is fucking unbelievable. I got into that show, The Killing, that they shot up in Seattle. I fucking love that show.
You're the second person that said to me in the last week, Peaky, to go watch the show Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, but, like, those shows are so... It's so intimidating, the level of writing and the level of work, and their one camera shoots like all this the amount of fucking I can't imagine the satisfaction when you complete it and you land it and you have a great final episode and the crowd's actually like you must have to take like a fucking 3-year break from being creative. Like I am seriously just blown away by those types of shows, and to be honest with you, like as far as my acting career goes, like I just want to be, you know, if I can get a part on one of those shows, like not
you
even
did
a
it. You're
regular,
good, man. And you're good.
Yeah, just you know, but that's all I want to do because I am a comedian and I just want to keep doing that.
Yeah,
and then just be living out here. And if some, hey, I got this bit part in a movie or this bit part in a TV show, it's like, yeah, I'll fucking do it. I'll keep my health insurance. I got to do it.
All right, the show's F is for Family. It's on Netflix specials. You're all over the country. Go to his website. To see where he's going to be. This is a lot of fun, man.
Oh, cool. Yeah, great catching up with you again, man.
See you, brother.
All right, Paul. Thank you, buddy.